Hi, good luck. And Freilichen Purim, 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 Purim. How do you pronounce it? Mwah! Hey, Purim Sameach, everybody. It's also 9:49, so let's give folks another 15 seconds to log on. No, that's enough. All right, it's 9:50. Do you know where your children are? Hopefully they're asleep or at least not bothering you, so you can listen to this Dvar Torah. Woo-hoo! All right, Purim Sameach, everybody. All right. I'm going to get to my Dvar Torah in just a second. There are a few Purim jokes that I would like to just tell to you in the spirit of Simchas Purim. These are jokes that I found a couple years ago. Most of them are pretty corny, but they're ones that if you have kids, I think your kids would really enjoy. Some are definitely better than others, so hold on to your seatbelts, even though that's not quite the expression. What type of tea do you drink on Purim? A Mordechai, haha. Not that great, but young kids might find that funny, assuming they know what chai tea is. All right, knock knock. Who's there? Benahafach. Benahafach who? Oh, okay, you can come in. All right, what do you use to check if your electronic Purim toys are working? A battery tester. Like a battery tester. No, some of these are terrible. I might actually, oh, no, all right, I'm going to just keep going. All right, endure the pain. All right, pain of Simcha. All right, what was the name of the Persian king who spoke in a whisper? L'Achashverosh. Ha ha ha. Why don't people in Persia have dull shoes? Because they have a shoe shine. Shoe shine. All right. How do you provide drinks at the Suda? You pour 'em. Okay. And let's just do one more because you're probably getting really tired of this. What do you give to poor doves on Purim? Matanot Leonim. Ha ha ha. All right. Now let's get into some Taita. In this week's parsha, we have the Big Day Kahuna, the priestly vestments that the Kohanim wore in the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan. Now, the materials required for these garments consisted of five items: gold, tchelet, which is kind of like a bluish color, argamam, which is like a purplish red, a reddish purple, tolaat sheni, which is like a scarlet red, and linen. These are the same materials that were also used for the parochet, the covering of the Mishkan. And one can be sure that there are many commentaries on why these particular items were in fact used, but what's striking is that the same combination occurs over and over and over again for the construction of the Mishkan and the fabrics associated with it. Now, I'd like to suggest something based on something that one of my friends had mentioned to me a few years back. Tchelet, argamon, and tolaat sheni are comprised of wool, but have very different colors. Tchelet, as I mentioned, is kind of a bluish color. Argamon is closer to purple, and tolaat sheni is scarlet or red. So if you look at a color wheel, for those of you who know what a color wheel is, basically it's the six main colors and how opposites correspond to each other. There are six basic colors, among them three sets of opposites. So one of these sides of opposites consists of blue, purple, and red, which are the three colors we mentioned, the corresponding opposites in that case being orange, yellow, and green. But all of one side of the color wheel are blue, purple, and red, the three colors of Tchelet, Argamon, and Tolaat Sheni. Therefore, because they also parallel their opposites, they actually represent the entirety of the color spectrum. And therefore, you can basically have all of the colors just from these three colors combined. And if you combine all the colors together, then you get black. And therefore, the only color missing is, in fact, white, which is represented by the white linen. Now, when these four colors together combine or use together, the symbolism of the entire visible light spectrum is in fact complete, thereby symbolizing pure light. The gold represents the grandeur or luster and is symbolic of the majesty surrounding all of this light, which is Hashem, with respect to the light of the world or the light of Torah. Now we see this combination of colors forming the entirety of light as a symbol of unity. This makes sense, right? Just as a prism or a rainbow, well, rainbows not so pleasant, but a prism at least, which diffracts it and separates it. In this case, it's the colors coming together. So we see the combination of colors also forming a different pattern. We see the colors throughout the Choshen, the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. Now the Choshen had in it 12 stones of different colors and different chemical makeups, which symbolize the 12 Shvatim and the 12 tribes, and ultimately the Jewish people as a whole. Now the settings for these gemstones were made of gold, mushbatzot, I believe is the term they use for how they're interwoven. And it bound these stones together as part of one unit, which, by the way, this gets into another interesting topic of 12 sort of being 13, whereas 12 is really a whole, which, you know, we see by the Shvatim, but we also see by Levi. It's another interesting topic that I mentioned before and hope to focus on more in the future. But putting that aside, the Choshen was also referred to as the Orim Petumim, which literally means lights and purities. B'nai Yisrael is, in fact, the light, right? All 12 Shvatim comprise the Klal Yisrael, right? And together, they are the light. They have everything, all the different aspects of light, and they carry with them the light of Torah, which, when conducted in the purest form, i.e. in the way of Hashem, illuminates us, and there is, in fact, no power stronger. And this can relate to Purim as well. Many things in Parsha Tetzava, actually, as well as Terumah, can correspond to Purim. The Megillah begins by speaking of the Jewish people as a scattered nation, Mefuzarim. However, once we came together in unity and restored our faith and trust in Hashem, we became this light once again. In fact, when miracle upon miracle has occurred and a day of rejoicing is declared, Mordechai appears in special garments, whereby he is in fact robed in gold, blue, white, purple wools, and fine linen. It's not exactly the same, but there is a definite parallel. In fact, the Gemara in Masechet Megillah and possibly elsewhere makes a parallel between the begadim that Mordechai wore and the Big Day Kahuna. So there is perhaps in this regard of what Mordechai was wearing a symbol of Jewish unity and a hidden light that was brought out of the darkness. Now, one interesting thing that I haven't quite solved is why there's no red, right? Now, we have gold, right, which we have, you know, throughout the Mishkan, Beit HaMikdash, all the garments, everything is gold trims, right? We have white, just like the white linen. We have purple, right? We have blue, like the Techeles, but we have no red by Mordechai. And it might B, again, this is a little bit conjecture on my part. Red often connects with the concept of either anger or the concept of intense passion. The whole notion of the way we were saved on Purim was a coming together of a more sublime nature. It wasn't like Hanukkah where we banded together and miraculously fought a war against a much greater army of the Greeks and won. It was a coming together. It was a melding. It was a more soft, beautiful light. And we didn't, I mean, yeah, we cried out to Hashem. We fasted. We did everything like that. But it wasn't a nace of passion in a sense. It was a simple, in a certain sense, surrendering to our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our acceptance. As we said, Kimu v'Kiblu, we accepted the Torah out of Ahava. So maybe in a certain sense, you know, why there's no red. There's other things that Kabbalah teaches about the color red, although I'm not so knowledgeable about that, but I do know that Adom also comes from the root of Adam, which is, you know, also related to Adama. And maybe on Purim, we elevated ourselves above this level, right? You know, I actually heard an interesting thing kind of based on two different, different Torahs that I heard. One was this morning. I apologize. I don't recall which Rabbi was listening to. I think it might have been Rabbi Moshe Tovia left, but I'm not certain. And then I heard a similar vort a few years ago, maybe even last year, about comparing Hanukkah and Purim, that on Hanukkah we spin a dreidel, which we put our fingers at the top and it spins on the bottom, right? Which shows that heaven is controlling what's happening on the earth, right? It's Nisim coming down from Shemayim, right? We have the Or, we have the light, and we have everything that's being supernatural, right? But on Purim, it's rooted in the physical, which is why we actually partake in very physical things, you know, like our Suda, and we eat and we drink, right? The grogger that we use, the noise or any type of noisemaker, we hold them from the bottom and they emanate their noise upward, right? So that we have to actually make the noise. We have to make the motion. We have to think to change. And what I heard this morning is that another difference is that when you spin a dreidel or any kind of top, really, it keeps going and going for a while. You set it in motion and, you know, like basically you do a little bit, Hashem does the rest. But by a grogger, you have to spin it. If you're not turning it, it's not turning on its own. You don't really have much, if any, momentum whatsoever from a grogger. It has a lot of friction built in. So you have to actively keep turning it. And it's showing us that by Purim, we also have to be more proactive. We can't just rely on salvation, like in a certain sense we do by Hanukkah. We have to be proactive, which is why there's so many mitzvot of being proactive. Shalach Manos, Matanos Le'Avyonim, I mean, even to some extent, the Machzit HaShekel, we're all donating. We have to actively be involved. And especially, you know, this year, and many people have been talking about that, there are many people who might feel left out or alone. And it's really important to make sure to include them. Even if we can't invite them to a Suda for COVID reasons, we can still wish them a Chag Sameach. We can call them up how they're doing. If they live near us, we can drop a Shalach Manos off by their door. You know, especially if it's somebody that we're not necessarily such good friends with, and somebody who maybe Nebuch doesn't have so many friends or so many loved ones, or maybe, you know, he doesn't have much of a family. So it's important to think about, and we can bring them simcha, especially when it's on Erev Shabbos, so they can have not only a Purim Sameach, but they can have a true Oneg Shabbos. May we all have a great Purim Sameach, b'marben b'simcha, and hopefully also marben b'kedusha, and bring in the Heil Goyim of Shabbos at the same time. Shabbat Shalom and Purim Sameach.